Wisconsin's Afternoon News is on the air, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Here are your hosts, Julia Fellow, and in for John McCure, it's Eric Bilstad.
John is back on Monday. Eric, so glad you're with us.
Really, for sure, he's coming back? Do we know that? Have we confirmed he's actually returning to the office someday? Just ask.
He's on an Asia trip right now.
Yes, it's a long one.
With fans.
Happy to be here, Julia. So keeping our eye on the White House. The cost to build that massive ballroom at the White House now jumping to about $300 million.
As backhoes tear down the more than 120-year-old structure. President Trump previously pledged the construction wouldn't touch the existing building.
It won't interfere with the current building. It won't be. It'll be near it, but not touching it. And pays total respect to the existing building, which I'm the biggest fan of.
But now he says the East Wing had to go.
Yeah, that's ABC's Mary Bruce. So the East Wing is essentially gone now, and some lawmakers asking for a little bit more information, expressing concern about this project. Here's CBS White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi.
It started as just a ballroom addition, and now there's an excavator that is working currently that is taking down the East Wing. It is almost all demolished. It includes offices of the First Lady, offices of military aides, the theater.
So all of that is now gone, and it does sound like the budget for this is ballooning.
This work is being done hastily, and we now know that this project is going to be about $300 million. It's going to include an entire new renovation of the East Wing, along with that ballroom that they're creating, and the price tag of this continues to go up because they're also going to be redoing a bunker that is underneath the East Wing that is about 80 years old, is in desperate need of modernization.
Which, that doesn't surprise me if they have bunkers that are not up to par.
Interesting.
They're just kind of under there. So who is paying for this? There is a list that continues to grow of some of the main execs and others who are paying for it. I mean, some on the list, Apple, Caterpillar, Hard Rock International, Micron Tech, NextEra Energy, Ripple. So there's a million, T-Mobile. So there's a lot of different execs involved in like helping to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
Trump says he's also kicking in. We don't know how much, but it is going to happen because it's already underway.
Trust the process. This is going to be a magnificent addition to the White House for many years to come. And it's not costing the taxpayers anything. The president is privately funding the ballroom addition to the White House.
That's the White House press secretary there explaining the situation. So next will come the actual ballroom creation. They're taking it down rather quickly. We'll see how long it takes to put up the ballroom and how that will affect the aesthetic in and around the White House area there.
Could you imagine how they're getting nickel and dimed on everything? Because, you know, with a house construction, it's always like, oh, it's going to be this amount. And then it's like $100,000 more. This one's $100 million more than projected.
Right. Yes. And it's only going to take a couple of more weeks, Mr. President, if we can continue to get through this thing. So, yeah. So you have that issue. And you also have like the very real question. And everyone probably has a different thought on it as to whether or not tearing down, you know, this however 100-year-old section of the White House, if that should happen or how that should happen and who should be able to do that. And there are some who question whether or not there should have been a little bit more oversight on how that was.
I did a double take because, you know, it's the beautiful White House. And I was like, what is that? And then I figured out what it was.
From sidelines to the studios and everything in between, no one brings you closer to the action.
Micah Parsons is on the trajectory to a first ballot Hall of Fame. That's the trajectory he's on, just plain and simple what it is.
It's time to get caught up on the green and gold with today's insider, ESPN's Alex Stroh, on Wisconsin's Afternoon News.
What the hell's going on out here?
Host of Green Bay Game Day on ESPN. Thanks for joining us.
Of course, it's weird seeing Eric in the afternoon. I'm very confused. Hi, Eric.
This is great. It's
Eric's
nice to
confused
see you.
Too.
Yeah.
No,
we'll get
I'm
through
just
it.
Kidding.
He actually thinks it's 4 a.m.
Right. Rodgers is saying in an interview that it did not end well.
Mm-hmm.
He's so honest with the Packers, but it's not going to be a revenge game this Sunday. Do you agree? Do you believe him?
Well, no, but I'll get to that in a moment. It didn't end well because they didn't make the playoffs, and he had such a high expectation of winning at a high level when he was here, right? Four MVPs, only one Super Bowl. Obviously, everybody wishes, including me, that they won more. But yeah. is it a revenge game? Of course it is. They drafted somebody to replace you. They traded you out of town. He might not admit it openly because I think he likes Jordan Love. He likes Matt LaFleur. Mm-hmm. I don't think he likes Brian Gutekunst, the general manager, very much. So he wants to prove him that he made the wrong choice, even though he did train and help and is still friends with Jordan Love.
There you
go. So as a fan, what are you hoping for? Because obviously you want the Packers to win. But I've heard the gamut. I've heard people saying they hope, like, Rodgers gets broken in two by Micah Parsons. The others hoping that he still throws well. Like, what do you root for?
So we've talked a lot about this on ESPN Milwaukee this week. And you're right. It's a mixed bag of reactions and emotions and what people want. I'm a Rodgers fan. But, like, I also want to walk out of that game feeling good about the defense. So if he has his third, fourth touchdown game of the season, I don't know how good I'll be feeling on Monday. I want the Packers to win. I want Rodgers to look good and not geriatric. That's what I want. That's what I want. How's that for an answer?
That sounds good.
You're younger than me. Hey.
Well, you're not geriatric because you're a broadcaster. He's a quarterback. 41 is a quarterback. It's crazy.
I know. Do you think there could be a major comparison in real time? Jordan Love and then Rodgers. Jordan Love and then Rodgers. And will Love look bad? Because, you know, some people have been very critical of his performance.
For sure, they have been, and it's something you and I have talked about, it seems, every week, right, is how do we evaluate Jordan Love? But I would say this. I think, naturally, yes, you're going to compare, and they're going to put the graphic up at some point on NBC, stats for both the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, if you're a Packers fan, take solace in the fact that you have the younger quarterback who has his entire career ahead of him, when in reality this is very likely Rodgers' final season. He's still got it. He's also one of the most talented to ever play the position. I don't know if Love will be that, but you have obviously a lot more runway with Love as your quarterback. He's 15 years younger than Rodgers. So, yeah, naturally there will be comparison, but I don't think any Packers fan is going to sit on the couch and go, wish we still had Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Because you've got the younger roster, you've got a quarterback who seems like his best days are still in front of him rather than behind him.
It gives me a flashback of what Rodgers said if he was still playing for Green Bay, and he wishes that they would have gone to the playoffs, like you said. And I remember doing an interview his last season, and we were at a bar, and I was interviewing the guy. I said, how do you feel that we're not going to the playoffs. And he goes, look at my wife. And she was like bawling, hands in her head. So, yeah, I can understand that. I think a lot of people are still rooting for Aaron Rodgers.
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, he gives you so many classic moments, so many great moments in this franchise's history, despite only one Super Bowl. It was a heck of a ride, and Sunday will be the last time we see him play at the same time as the Packers, unfortunately, just...
Strophy, did you see this story? So the Steelers are wearing, like, throwback uniforms, which is normal. This happens every year. There's always these alternate or these throwbacks or whatever. So the ones they're wearing on Sunday have yellow helmets. So because of that, the Packers now are going to do their all-white, which they wear those occasionally. What, since last year, they'll pop them on. This is a normal thing where if the home team just decides, hey, we're going to change our colors, and then it's up to the Packers or whoever's traveling to that stadium to be like, well, we might not want to wear the same color.
Yeah, we have to adjust now. I don't remember ever seeing the announcement the week of, like we had this week, to your point, Eric, right? Like, typically, the Packers wore these uniforms week two at home against Washington on that Thursday night game, and we knew that for weeks, right? It was advertised, okay, week two, we're breaking these out. This comes, I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago it came out. So kind of bizarre timing. I know Isaac, who's producing the show right now, said to me beforehand, is this the Steelers getting in the Packers' head? No, I don't think it's that. I think it's just poor planning.
Into our head. Because you look at Rodgers and he'll look like a bee for sure.
Oh, definitely,
But he might look Packers-esque.
So are you going to be confused would be my question for you, Julia. Will you be confused seeing yellow helmets and rooting against yellow? I'm always confused.
How much better would this game have been if it was in Green Bay?
Oh, the circumstances would be way, way higher, right?
I mean, what were they doing? Come on.
Blame the NFL. I mean, originally, I think this was a game they had pegged for London, or I think it was Ireland, actually. Right. But then Rodgers signed in Pittsburgh. You can't do that overseas. So I wish it was in Green Bay, because I would be so curious to see what the Packers fans' reaction is. Is it booing? Is it cheering? Right? We had Chris Middleton return to Pfizer Forum for the first time last night. playing the Bucks, and he was universally applauded, right? Every Bucks fan loves him. I think it would be much more of a mixture.
Could they have done, like, a reel, you know?
They would have, but again, I don't know what the reception would be. It wouldn't be as visceral as it was for Favre in 2009 when he was a Viking.
Because it was the Vikings.
Right. You're playing for a division rival, whereas, I mean, you're playing in a different conference. It just happens to be the one of every 4 years you play this team.
Right.
I think it'd mostly be positive, but yeah, I'm curious to see. Packers fans travel so well, so granted, there's going to be a ton in Pittsburgh, I would imagine. But I'm curious to see. Is it boos? Is it cheers? A little bit of both. But yeah, it's unfortunate it's not in Green Bay. I'm with you on that.
So the question I've been asking everybody, Julie has heard me ask this a million times this week, is, okay, for the Rodgers legacy, you know, when you pull back and look at the career, is it more important that he wins this game on Sunday or the game in Chicago at Soldier Field against the Bears in a couple of weeks?
It's a really good question. I would lean this game just because he would join only four other quarterbacks as the only guys to beat all 32 active franchises. Yeah. The four quarterbacks on that list are the guys he's always compared to. It's Brett Favre, obviously, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Drew Brees. Those are the four names who have beaten all 32 teams.
That's incredible.
Rodgers would become the fifth with a win on Sunday. So that's only the reason I would do that. But he's got to continue the ownership of the Bears, too. So also an important game on that schedule. But I would say this one in terms of legacy, just because if you're – and he's always, like I said, he's always talked about it with those names, right? Brees and Brady and Manning and Favre. And just to join them on another list, I think, would just solidify what a Hall of Fame career he's had.
Packers are 3.5-point favorites for this game. Do you agree?
I do. I will be honest with you, though. When our ESPN Wisconsin score graphic comes out this weekend, this will be the first time this season I pick against the Packers.
Uh-oh.
I think Rodgers and the Steelers get it done this weekend. Yeah, I do. I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring out exactly what the Packers are through, what is it, six games now. I think they're a good team. I'm not sure they're a great team. I think they could be a great team at some point. But this seems like a week where they go on the road. It's a hostile environment. It's national spotlight. And Rodgers, as we talked about at the top, he wants to win this one bad, and I think he's gonna get it done.
Green Bay's still gonna be hopping this weekend.
Yeah, I would bet.
Are you gonna be up there?
I won't be in Green Bay this weekend. Okay. I'll be right here in the good land on the other team.
He is Alex Strove, host of Green Bay Game Day on ESPN.
Strophy.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.
4:38 on WTMJ. So happy that you're with us. John is off. He'll be back on Monday after an Asia tour with fans.
I'm going to recognize
Eric Milstead with us.
He'll look totally different.
He'll look amazing.
He'll have long hair.
Yeah, exactly. A beard. Did you watch Three's Company growing up? Or no, you weren't growing up. Are you older than me?
I am older than you, and I know of the show, but I did not watch it.
Could you be my father?
No,
I'm just kidding. I could be the mother of many people in the newsroom.
It's true.
I'd be a teen mom, though.
I know of the show, though.
Okay, Suzanne Summers, how about her Thighmaster? Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Yeah.
Well, she passed away recently, and her widower says that he just made an AI twin of her because he misses her so much. He spent months working with a firm to create this project. So AI Suzanne Summers, the first time he experienced her, you asked, he talked to her for about 2 minutes to begin with, and he says it was a little odd. This is what it was like.
Actually, the first time I experienced her, because it's been in development for many months now, I talked to her for 2 minutes, and it was a little odd. And then after about 2 or 3 minutes, I totally forgot I was talking to her twin. I was talking to a robot, and it was amazing, really amazing.
Isn't that incredible?
So it's like like a program he's basically talking to?
Okay. It is her voice.
Yeah, talking back.
Wow.
Crazy.
So he said that the hardest part about working with a firm to create this, an organization, was to find out which era of voice to use.
The voice was the thing we had to decide on. Because if you look at an interview Suzanne did in the 70s and an interview she did 10 years ago, it's a whole different voice.
And how is it, you ask?
So finally, we got the voice. The voice is perfect.
Wow. So the creator then worked on finishing it up for him. Then he'll go through it and ask questions and test her. And this is how he'll ask.
Basically, my job is to go through it and ask questions and test her and make sure that everything is the way we discussed it, the way we agreed to do it, and that it's the best possible version that we can do at this moment.
This is him talking on CNN, by the way. Suzanne Summers apparently approved of this before she passed away.
Okay.
Even 30 years ago, they talked about this.
So we talked about doing it, her doing it. She said, I think I should do it. I think it's important. It's a new way to communicate, etc. Mm-hmm. I think we should definitely do it. You know, those were her orders.
A new way to do it, yes. It's not even her. But, I mean, if you have a whole bunch of interviews, she was on QVC.
Right.
You know, she was on everything.
So it'd be easy for the AI to grab her voice, her imprint, her reaction, her thoughts in a certain type of way, right? Like, there, it would be easy for that to be able to kind of recombobulate that, if you will.
But she was prolific author.
Okay, so yeah, so then you can even add all of that in there. Mm-hmm. Can you do that with, like, an everyday person? Like, will there become a time when, like, any person could try to do this?
I have maybe 20 minutes of my mom's voice, and boy, would I love to talk
to
her.
You
know,
try?
She passed away in 1996 when I was 11 years old. Yeah. I mean, if I was able to do that, I did do one thing, and it freaked my family out. There was a picture of her.
Okay.
And there's an AI thing where you can bring a picture to life for like 3 seconds and it makes their mouth move and their eyes blink. And my family did not like that.
Well, would you be interested in something like this? Like if you were able to, quote unquote, talk to your mom?
I'm not sure it would help us get over.
Right.
The
sure.
Loss.
Of course. Of course.
He said that he still watches videos of her all the time and has them playing in the other room, so then it feels like she's there.
Okay.
But are you trying too hard? And the ethics around this, is this helping or is this hurting someone who's in so much pain of losing someone they love?
Right. Can it be therapeutic in a way?
I don't know. I wouldn't do it to a child. I wouldn't. I don't know. I don't think my dad would be okay with me doing that when I was little.
Right.
Because when you look at an 11-year-old, they're so small. You know, and they're still growing,
still
your brain's still developing.
Yep, yep.
You got to process that the right way. Hmm. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe that's going to be the thing. Anytime anyone passes away, even me in the future, my husband can talk to my AI self, my AI twin, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
443 NWTMJ.
If there is not going to be reform that fixes these problems, then I think it's time for the governor to call on Jill Underlie to either do her job or step aside.
That is Congressman Tom Tiffany, who's running for governor today, just a couple of hours ago, calling for something to happen regarding State Superintendent Jill Underlie. This is because of a story that we've been following here on Wisconsin's Afternoon News. I know Kristen and Steve have been all over it on Point Taken. This investigation by the Cap Times over what went on, how long it took, what wasn't done when it came to teacher misconduct and sex misconduct cases. I should also mention that Washington County Executive Josh Shulman, who's also running for governor, has also released a statement calling for a resignation of some type or an investigation into this case. So Jill Underlie, according to the Cap Times found at least 44% of more than 450 investigations that involve sex misconduct or grooming allegations when it comes to teachers across the state. And the paper made requests at school districts across the state, open records requests, asking for more information. And like every school district was different about it. Some like didn't even have any information to share. Others said, yeah, you got to pay us $100,000 because we don't have the manpower to go do it. I mean, just crazy numbers and different things like that. And there's been a lot of talk to get Jill Underlie on the phone or to get some answers from her. She hasn't really responded other than a video she posted on YouTube. They were hoping that she would talk today, but
it's my understanding from her representatives that she's attending a Distinguished Alumni Award event today at her alma mater in Indiana rather than fulfilling her duty to the people of Wisconsin.
That is State Representative Amanda Nedweski, the co-chair of the Committee on Government Operations, Accountability, and Transparency.
It's a long title.
It is, yeah. They held a hearing today on it, and she was not there. So instead, they heard from the deputy state superintendent. Lots to get into here. Where should this go from this point? Should we be changing the law? Should we tweak something? Joining us now on Wisconsin's Afternoon News is State Senator John Jagler. John, I know you're on the Education Committee. I know education's a big part of your purview and what you're most interested in fighting, fixing, changing when it comes to the state of Wisconsin. I know you're at that Tom Tiffany news conference. What's your take on some of this?
Well, look, guys, I mean, this comes down to how big of a problem is this and what we should do about it. I mean, politics are going to politic. You know, Tom Tiffany was there and he made some good points. I, as a policymaker, as chair of the Senate Education Committee, is trying to look at this as more of a, okay, problem-solving thing. And it's, sure, it's clear, we don't know how big of a problem this is. I mean, you know, you look at, here's a perfect example. Here's a lot of things of what's going on, what was disturbing in that initial Cap Times report. Okay, teacher X is accused of something wrong, something perhaps not, you know, criminal, sometimes was criminal, but for, you know, something creepy, something weird, something,
right,
some of the grooming stuff that we're talking about, contact after hours, contact texts, weird behavior, okay? And the school district went to these teachers oftentimes and said, what's going on here? What'd you do that? Hey, how about this? Suspend, voluntarily forfeit your license, and we'll leave it there. It'll go away. And that's what happened. And, well, you know, we have to decide whether that's okay or not. Because, you know, if you actually launch a formal investigation, maybe there is more serious conduct that happened. Maybe there's more victims. But, you know, what was so frustrating to me about Jill Underlee is she did not comment to the Cap Times in that,
right,
story. And she sent out a spokesperson and said she didn't come to this hearing today. But one of the things I want to ask from her, in her initial response to the Cap Times story, she said, when it comes particularly, I know I'm narrowing down to this part of the story because it's a huge, big story, but I think it's important to show how frustrating this is. She said in the initial response to the Cap Times, demanding a retraction, calling it misleading, saying those forfeitures are permanent. They're a permanent forfeiture. If you turn in your license in this matter, it's not like you just didn't renew it. They're permanent.
Right. You can't teach again. Well,
yeah. But the Cap Times discovered that's not actually the case. It's going back to 2018. There were at least 8 that they know of,
yep,
of people who actually got their license back and went back to the classroom. Who was notified? How was this notified? And so is it permanent? It's not permanent. In a letter to us as chair of the Senate Education Committee and co-chair, Senator Romaine Quinn, she said most of the time it's permanent. Then they put out a video this morning that looked kind of like a hostage video of her stating her case and how she takes this seriously. And she says it's permanent again.
Well, yep.
What is it? And like I said, that I realize that's just a small part of the story, but it's one of the reasons why we want to talk to her. She's not returned our calls. She did return, had from her office with her signature on it, a letter to some questions that we had posed, but it only led to more questions. So I, you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom of how big this is, how big of a concern they think it is. So we're going to actually invite her before our committee. I'm chair of the Senate Education Committee on November 4th. It's my birthday. That'll be a great day.
A nice happy birthday for you.
I'm going to invite her to come and testify, I don't want her deputy. I like Tom McCarthy just fine. I have conversations with him. You know, I like the folks that she sent to our committee before, but she's never appeared once before our committee on any matter. So it's an invited testimony only, and the only invited speaker is her. And I want to ask her some questions and get to the bottom of this because the way I see it right now, guys, you know, protecting kids, that needs to be a real priority, not a reaction to save face from some story. And that's all it seems to be right now, and a poor reaction at that.
Here's my question. Maybe it's multifaceted. Is this just political because they're running for governor and this is perfect to say, you know, protect our kids? Or, you know, are you talking about maybe this could be a longer conspiracy of something that could be like, you know, covering up the priests and that were sexually assaulting children when they were younger? Are you trying to say that Jill Underlee is not doing her job? She's not deputized to arrest anyone. People are innocent until proven guilty. I mean, do you think that there could be a lot more where we're covering up potential pedophiles?
I don't know, but we will never know unless we can ask her some questions. Look, there's a culture. There's a culture here that's been going back for years, long before Jill Underlee, probably even before Governor Evers when he was superintendent. Something is wrong, and it's designed to protect the machine, the educational bureaucracy machine. And that's all it's ever been. It's never really been about protecting kids. Now, having said that, there are people at the Department of Public Education that are deeply concerned about this. And do I believe there's some sort of grand scheme? No. But the the machine will always protect the machine. The bureaucracy will always protect the bureaucracy. And whether this is the surrendering of license and stuff, is that just a way to, are you really about getting bad actors out, or is it about not embarrassing the school or not putting the district through this? And the districts, by the way, are not clean in this either. Part of the Department of Public Instruction conversations I've had with them is they're not getting exactly clear information here from the districts either.
Yeah, it's inconsistent.
So I as a policymaker, as someone who, looking at this from the outside, what can we do to make it easier? And the fact that they never came to us with this problem before. Department of Public Instruction, we've had dozens and dozens of conversations about all kinds of matters. No one from the department came and said, hey, you know what? When it comes to this grooming stuff, and we got some bad actors, we need some help getting out of, we need some clarification in X, Y, or Z of the law, or, or when it comes to more money, they never made that request before. It's never been about, we need money for this, or for further investigators
right.
or anything.
No, I understand what you're saying. We're going to let you go, John. I know it's been a long one for you, as you guys have been cranking on the Senator John Jagler. They're going to hold a.
That's what happens when you try to eat really quick before an interview, guys.
I get it.
I know, it's all right. Thank you, John. John's going to have a hearing on this, he says, on his birthday, that first week in November, and you would expect a little bit more detail on this. And his point being with the license is that if you revoke the license, is that enough? And who should be mandating that? And by the way, if you are revoking the license so they can't teach again, why are there at least 8 times, according to the Cap Times, when some of these teachers were able to come
back? Absolutely.
So these are all questions that have yet to be answered. It's 4:58.